The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
It's great to have you here. George Kliarkoff will join us later this hour. He is the commissioner of the Pac-12. We've already talked to Mario Cristobal and now Pete Tamil joining us from ESPN. Pete, good afternoon. And we have all read that the NCAA has ratified its new convention or its new constitution. I don't really understand what it all means, if anything. Good afternoon, and please explain.
Thanks, Professor Feinbaum. We'll now dive into the weeds of NCAA East. And essentially, the new constitution that's been ratified has really been like a door opening to draw up a new constitution, if that makes sense. This is now, from talking to people today on that 21-person committee, this is now they can start to chart the future. And big picture takeaways, Paul, I would start with, if there was going to be a fracture away from the NCAA or a fracture of the Power Five pulling away, this may have been a pivot point for some of this stuff to come up, and it did not. So that may be actually among the more significant things is what hasn't happened more than what has. And then, again, it's the NCAA, right? Nothing happens quickly. This is like the committee to start the committee. So now for Division I and college football, which are the things, obviously, that a majority of your viewers and listeners care about, they will now chart the course for what Division I looks like in the future. And that will, again, be discussed and debated and then eventually voted upon over the next 6 months. That's my understanding of the process going forward.
And Pete, is there an expectation of when all this is done, what will be different?
I do think things will be different. I talked to a source today who basically said there's a consensus in the room that if this is a nothing burger, we're all going to look really stupid. So there are big issues to tackle that will be tackled right away. And essentially the news out of Indy this week was that each of the three divisions are now going to be able to chart their own course. So Division III, Bates College can't affect Alabama. So that's sort of like the first step of this, and then allowing them to chart their own course. Now they actually have to go ahead and really chart the course, and they're going to be weekly meetings of the 21 member committee. What's perhaps most interesting about that is that there are two members from each of the Power Five schools. There's two Big East folks on there. And then of the other 24 conferences, if I'm doing my math right, and I went to Syracuse, so I'm not good at math, there's only nine folks represented. So it's sort of a sign that football is going to kind of be leading the bus on this, and the decisions are going to be made around what the money making schools are going to do and what they want to do. So, look, I asked a couple of people this today, like, well, come August, what's it going to look like? Because if there's one thing I've learned about college sports fans, Paul, is they care very little about process, and they'd like to know result. Like, people don't really care about the infractions process. They want to know if they're going to be on probation or how many scholarship losses are. And I feel like the same thing is when fans look at NCAA process, they care very little about the process. They want to know how it's going to affect them watching the Tide or the Tigers on Saturday. And from some periphery calls today, knowing I was going to be quizzed by Professor Feinbaum on this, there weren't a whole lot of like tangible things where people could say, I guarantee in August it's going to look like this, or it could potentially look like this. But the one thing that they did say is that they're going to tackle the big issues right away and give updates throughout. So those are obviously going to be some sort of name, image, and likeness, maybe guardrails, maybe no guardrails, maybe some nationalization, some synchronicity and hopefully some clarity on some of the bigger issues that have sort of ambiguously hung over the sport.
Pete, since Mark Emmert looked like he was leading the parade as opposed to getting run over, and it appears that some of, if not all of his power will be ceded to the individual divisions, I'm assuming he'll still be making his multi-million-dollar contract and at least acting like he runs college athletics. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the presidents are, look, it's like that Spider-Man gif where everybody points at everybody, right? The presidents are still in charge, and they are still, you know, paying Mark Emmert an exorbitant amount of money for a very long time. And I think they've been comfortable with the fact that Mark Emmert has just kind of allowed, has essentially done very little and allowed them to keep making gobs of money and keep the monster growing. And now the sign is that this monster of college sports has become so big, and really the Alston case in the Supreme Court ruling was probably the biggest wake-up call that sort of changed course and got us here for some sort of, like, do we need the NCAA? How do we reform the NCAA? What should the NCAA be governed by? And these are the questions and how we've gotten there. And the presidents, who have other things to do running major universities, are allowing Mark Emmert to keep going more because, from talking to presidents, they just get a bunch of college presidents in a room and they can't decide to do anything. So it's sort of been a collective ambivalence that's allowed him to stay NCAA president, even though he is wildly unpopular with athletic directors, coaches, even fans, if they cared as much. I mean, it's been a pretty remarkable study, his tenure, Paul, in how a leader can survive in college athletics because the stakeholders and decision makers aren't really the people who live in it.
It should tell us all we need to know, but we already know it, so there's nothing we are learning other than it seems like he, if they removed him, it would create some unknown, would it not? Or would it even matter?
I think they could improve it if they hired at that position. Maybe a little new energy and, sometimes you've seen this in the SEC with coordinators, right? Sometimes there's just change for change sake a little bit.
Sure.
So I think if you polled, the 130 FBS athletic directors, on whether they thought things could get better or worse if they removed Mark Emmert and brought in somebody else, I would think it would be 95% plus would go on the better side.
That's a good number.
That would be that. Yeah, that was, it's a pretty big number. We will look back on his tenure, and it might not be done for a long time, Paul, but we'll look back at his tenure as a pretty remarkable run for someone who has just is so universally regarded with a low approval rating.
Seems like the only person who has a more job security right now is Vladimir Putin. Pete, on the subject that we have beaten to death, and we talked to you about it a week ago, but with a little bit of time to reflect and maybe talk to others, just your final takeaway on where we are with the CFP. I ask you that because we're about to talk to Kliakoff, and we heard from Phillips last week, and I'm just trying to figure out where we are.
Yeah, so I made some calls on this earlier this week, Paul, and I think where we are is that, like, not everybody is ready to give up, so there's still some hope, and that change will happen. There's 4 years left, so change would happen in those last two. And it looks like early March would be the next time a meeting comes together, but right now there aren't a whole lot of people who think the result would be much different than the last set of meetings when Bob Bowlsby just kind of took his stuff and stormed out because you can only talk in circles for so long. And, Jim Phillips laid bare the ACC's case the other day in pretty blunt terms. So I think that it's very safe to say we would have a 12-team playoff in the quote-unquote year 13, meaning the 26th season, and it would expand by then. And that clearly there's some folks who want other changes within the sport and other details dialed in within the playoff before that change happens. And I mean, look, the college sports landscape is just like wildly diverse group that all comes together and has to protect their own turf and then secondarily look out for the good of the game. And what we're in the middle of right now is just massive turf protection. And, some of the issues that the ACC presidents may have are, you know, completely different than thoughts that, you know, Pac-12 folks may have in protecting the Rose Bowl. I'm sure George will tell you, you know, it's just the duties of the folks on the Pac-12 to protect the Rose Bowl. So it's just, it's interesting that the issues everybody has and is stumping for, just really how drastically different they all are. And meanwhile, Greg Sankey, God bless him, is just sort of like, it's like the great taunt of all time. We're good with four. You know, it's like it's the loudest humble brag every time it comes out of his mouth, because he basically just smirks and says, okay, we'll just keep owning the sandbox and you can keep going playing in the mud. We'll just keep owning the sandbox. And they're obviously not naive to that either. So it's a quintessentially college sports power struggle right now. And I sense very little optimism, but it sounds like they're going to take one more whack at it.
Well, by March, the weather will be nice somewhere. So maybe they can find a nice five-star resort to hang out and talk about it again. Although I think every meeting should be in Indianapolis, though, Pete, because at least they will get to it as quickly as possible.
Yes, Indianapolis, a fine town where those of us lucky enough college sports spend a lot of time wandering those tunnels, right, over the street. Yeah, like little rats in a maze, looking for our Elmo's steak sauce instead of cheese.
Pete, thank you. I always appreciate your time. It's great to have you again. I discovered last week that your interview here was your first official interview at ESPN, and you have now made it at least a week. So congratulations.
Well, we'll see if I have any voicemails when I get off the phone.
You probably will, and I can guess where they're coming from. Pete, thank you very much.
Paul, thanks for your time. Appreciate
it. Great to talk to Pete Thamel from ESPN. Already we have talked to Mario Cristobal and Pete, the commissioner of the Pac-12, 30 minutes away. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Hey, welcome back. Let's go to Chattanooga next, and Curtis is on the phone. Hello, Curtis.
Hey, Paul. Happy New Year to you. Been a while since me and you talk.
Well, wonderful. Thank you.
Paul, first of all, I was listening to the program, and the lady from Georgia had lost her husband. And I just want to say I'm sorry to hear about her loss, but I'm so happy. And I want to shout out to the Bulldog Nation. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you said that.
Paul, another thing. I want, with this new constitution, what that means for the world, you know, of course, you know I'm a Tennessee Vol fan. What do that mean for us as far as the allegations when Pruitt was there?
I don't think it's going to have a direct effect, although the longer all of this drags on, I think Tennessee may be situated to be in a better spot than I thought. And I say that, Curtis, because the NCAA really is a dysfunctional entity right now, and that includes its enforcement division. So with all this chaos, it would be my hope, and I'm sure yours, that Tennessee could lean on them and say, look, what else can we do? We did your job. We self-reported. We threw our coach and countless others out. We retired our athletic director, who was a legend. And why not give us something back in return? That should be the way it goes down. Now, you don't know, but that in a perfect world, that's exactly what should happen. Let's go to Ken in Wetumpka, Alabama.
We did your job.
Hey, Ken.
We self-reported. We threw our coach and countless others out.
We will wait this out because some of you don't realize there is a delay between what you see on television and what you hear if you are on hold. So this is what we call an exercise in futility here.
Let's go to Ken in Wetumpka, Alabama.
Hey, Paul.
Hello, Ken. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Paul. Look, I wanted to ask you something.
Yeah, Ken, you might want to turn the TV down for a second so you can hear me.
Okay, Paul.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Paul, I want to say one thing. You know, I've been watching you for years, and I don't want this fella. I don't want you to get the wrong impression, but I've been listening for years, and that eye man, I am sick and tired of listening to it. I am sick and tired of listening to it. All he does is berate people. Now, I don't ever say nothing. I just listen and try to be calm and listen to everybody share what they think about everything. But he is one man. He needs to go get a haircut. Tell him to get a haircut.
Now, Ken, please, I think you should show some kindness. I mean, after all, we're just a few hours removed from the death of Meatloaf. So I'm sure having a tough day.
I guess you're right, Paul. But, I love your show. I love your show. And I just had to get it out of me. I've been, Paul, when you hold things back, you just can't. Sooner or later, you have to explode.
Well, I'm glad you did, Ken. I think the most important thing I've learned in therapy is let it out, let it breathe. It's cathartic to get. And if you have evil toxins within you, like wanting to say something unkind about I-Man, the best thing to do is to expurgate them. Thank you for the call. I really appreciate that. It only took 7 extra seconds. Nobody get mad. Let's go to Darren in Florida. Hello, Darren.
Hey, Paul. Great show as always.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you a question about the SEC East this year. It seems like going into this new season, it seems like the SEC East may be even more stronger than the West this year with Shane Beamer and the class he's put together, Tennessee, what they've got going on, Georgia, obviously, and just wanted to ask your opinion on what you would expect from some of these teams in the East, like South Carolina, how good they could be, especially with the transfers they've got, as well as the class they recruited.
Yeah, you know what? Thanks for the call, Darren. I still think the West is going to be a little more difficult because I think you're going to have two of the top 5 or 6 schools in the country in A&M and Alabama. Georgia will be ranked. And you know, who's after Georgia? I think most would guess it's Kentucky right now. Tennessee, South Carolina are in a race to try to get that next spot. I think Beamer and Heupel have done a phenomenal job. Are they ready to challenge Georgia is really the question. And it's hard to answer that without knowing more. And we will know more once we get through spring. Thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Our shout out to our friends in prison. Hey. You got to be number one in any demo you can be. And right now, that's that's where we are. Hey. They have, prisoners have rights too. You got, and I don't mind for them to have my back. Let's go to Lewis in Georgia. Hey, Lewis, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Very well. Thank you.
If you got a second, I'd like to share a story with you about Coach Mark Ricks.
Sure.
I had a cousin in North Carolina that was literally dying, and he was an avid Georgia Bulldog fan, and a business partner of his knew what a fan he was and also knew Coach Mark Ricks. And he gave Coach Ricks a call and told him about my cousin. And Coach Ricks was in the airport on his way to see the Georgia-Alabama championship game. And he stopped what he was doing and called my cousin and talked to him like a long lost friend, talked like he'd known him all his life, and talked about the game and how exciting it was going to be, and talked to him about the team and what a wonderful thing it would be if Georgia could win the bowl game. And then he switched topics, and he told my cousin that he thought he was going to have a wonderful time when he met Jesus Christ. And my cousin's brother was on the phone participating in the phone call. And he told Coach Ricks that they were also aware that he was fighting his own battle with health issues, and they would pray for him. And he thanked them very much, and they said their farewells, and that ended the phone call. But I thought your viewers and listeners might like to know that there are people out there like Coach Ricks that don't mind stopping what they're doing and reaching out to help their fellow man.
Lewis, that is an extraordinary story, and it doesn't surprise me only because of one thing. I'd always wondered about Mark Ricks, and because I didn't know him. This is going back 15 years ago, and a friend of mine, a minister, invited me to come hear him one morning, one of these 7 a.m. FCA breakfasts I'm sure many of you out there have been to. And I listened to Coach Rick give his testimony in some ways like you just described. And it was a changing event in terms of a lot of things, and it was eye-opening to hear him that raw and that honest. And I'm really glad to hear your story, because for all the criticism that he had received as a coach, I don't think any of it really bothered him too much because of where his heart is.
Well, I'd always heard that he was a real nice guy, but that really accentuated it for me. I'm a 78-year-old ex-Green Beret, but that brought a tear to my eye.
Well, I tell you what, I appreciate it, and I won't bother you with questions about the Green Beret, but I am so intrigued by folks like you who have done things like that, and I know how proud your family must have been of your service.
Well, that was a long time ago.
It was. Well, but you did it, though, Lewis, and we appreciate it. Thank you so much for sharing that story.
Well, very welcome.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Lee is up next in Cincinnati. Hello, Lee. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. That's kind of a tough act to follow, but I'll try. I just got one quick question for you. I mean, I'm a Florida Gator fan. If I'm not mistaken, Billy Napier was Scott Strickland's first and foremost choice for coach, was he not?
Everything that I heard, I don't think anyone else was under consideration.
Well, the question I have is, it's going to take time to turn the Gator program around. And it really seems like that's exactly what Billy Napier is trying to do. He's trying to start over from scratch. But do you think that Scott Strickland is going to give him the time necessary for him to be able to rebuild the program from the ground up?
Well, I cannot answer that for this reason. I wouldn't have thought 2 weeks before Dan Mullen was let go that he would have been in serious danger. So things change quickly. And I'll spare you the, of course he will, because this is Florida, which, I mean, firing coaches down there has become a fairly regular pastime.
Well, the only thing that I'm afraid of is that when Urban Meyer stepped in, let's face it, he won a national championship almost right off the bat. And I'm afraid that that's what Florida fans have now come to expect. New coach has to come in, and they can win immediately. And that's just, by far, you know this as well as I do, that's the exception and not the rule everywhere.
It is, but the expectations there are higher than most places. You're not going to see a celebration at Florida of winning seven games, as you've seen a couple of other places. The standard is high, and I don't think it was made any easier this year by Georgia winning the national championship. We'll take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. The commissioner of the Pac-12, George Kliakoff, joins us shortly.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Friday afternoon, and it gives us great pleasure to welcome for the first time on this program, the commissioner, fairly new, been there about a year, of the Pac-12, Commissioner George Kliakoff. Commissioner, thank you very much. It's great to have you on, and certainly hope all is well out there.
Paul, thanks for having me. It's actually been less than 7 months, although it's felt like several years.
I don't know why it seemed like a long time. I know you were appointed about a year ago. Well, let's start with what this experience has been like.
Well, it's different than any of the previous jobs I've had. It's really interesting. I've been a fan of college athletics my whole life. I was a former college athlete, but this is a different world. And I think I my timing is impeccable. I stepped in the middle of this on July 1st, which was the first day of NIL. And we were just coming off of the Alston decision and the announcement of the CFP format for expansion. And shortly thereafter, we had conference realignment and the NCAA deciding that it was going to hold a constitutional convention. So lots of things all going on at the same time, but it's been really exciting and fun.
A lot of people in your position speak NCAA ease or commissioner speak or whatever the right word is. I don't know. But you have been widely praised by many for being very blunt and honest about the conditions that you inherited, where your league is, where college athletics is. Let's discuss a little bit about your approach to communicating about the things that you are dealing with every day.
Yeah, well, I want to be transparent about what I see. And I do take a different perspective because I don't have a background in college athletics. And I think that's unique in some of the rooms I get to sit in. And I get to approach it a little bit differently. But my approach has always been to just be transparent about what I see, to try and work collaboratively to come to solutions. And, you know, I've been transparent about some of the issues that I see broadly in college athletics, which are real threats to what we do collectively as a business. And I've also been very clear about some of the deficits that I see in our conference that we have to work on, the schools as well as the conference, but at the same time, praising the things we do well.
Commissioner, we're just getting through this conclave in Indianapolis. A week before that, there was another conclave that did not end well for those of us eager for something different in the college football place. Can you describe what those meetings were like, and where are we right now in relation to an expanded playoff?
Yeah, so put me in the category of people who are excited about an expansion of the playoffs. You know, I think we're the only conference that has publicly said we're in favor of any expansion in any format that goes beyond four teams. We'd like eight, we'd like 12. We don't really care about the AQs or what the AQs look like, but that's not where everyone is. And I know we're going to get to expansion. It's work that needs to be done in a room. It's a little bit like watching the sausage being made. Usually, historically, I've been told that the way it works is you all get in the room, you figure out who needs to agree to what, you negotiate it, and then you make the announcement. I think the disservice we did to our fans and candidly to the media as well was to announce in June a format and a substance for the expansion and extension of the CFP that have been negotiated among four of the 11 people that need to say yes for it to happen within the current contract. So I think now we're focused on what group needs to say yes to what it looks like beyond the current contract. And then if we can shoehorn in the last 2 years of the contract, great. But I think everybody's been collaborative, but people are, you know, understandably kind of taking positions that they believe are in the best interest of all of college athletics, and also are protecting their own conferences or schools. And I think that's an appropriate thing to do. I wish we didn't have to do it in public.
I understand that, Commissioner, and you laid it out very succinctly there, but there is such frustration. And, you know, we communicate primarily here with college football fans, and we all, I'll speak for all of them, we feel like we were misled, and now there's just abject disappointment right now.
You were misled.
Okay.
The fans were misled. They were basically shown a format in June that did not have the approval of all the people that needed to approve it. And for me, that was a mistake. And I think it misled the fans and it misled the media. And I hope we don't ever do that again. It's a self-inflicted wound. I was in the meeting in June, and literally you found out about the format a couple hours after I found out about it. And I just don't think that's the way we should be doing business.
That was a long time ago, though, and based on, I wasn't in the room, but I was not too far outside of it, and it just seemed like you know, these meetings went on and on and on. As someone who is fresh to this group, how does this get solved?
Well, I think the focus has to be on beyond year 12, and where you can have not a unanimous vote, but you can have a vote of enough of the conferences that you would need to create a corpus, and then other conferences can decide whether or not to join. My guess is that if the right group of conferences agree on what the future format should look like, all of the other conferences will decide to participate. I don't know whether we're going to be on the inside or outside of that, whether the, you know, kind of the format that we prefer is going to be the one decided or not, but we're going to be very collaborative about working through those issues. And then my strong hope is that after we figure that out for year 13 and beyond, that it'll be kind of a layup to agree, well, to agree on the fact that we should start it sooner than 13. But I'm less optimistic about that today than I was several months ago.
Is there a specific roadmap that you right now would endorse as we look ahead?
Well, I've endorsed all of the three 8-team and all of the three 12-team proposals that have been discussed. Those include no AQs, six AQs, or 5+1, five being going to the autonomy five and one being to the next best highest ranked conference champion. So I've endorsed all of those. I'm not sitting here telling you that I don't have other issues that we need to address. I have a fiduciary obligation to the Rose Bowl, as does the Big Ten. Other people in the room have fiduciary obligations to other bowl games that have been discussed. That doesn't mean that's a stopping point. It's just something that needs to be discussed. And I've asked that if we go beyond year 12 and we're signing up for year 13 and beyond, today we have no contractual commitment, no grant of rights beyond year 12. The whole thing goes away at the end of year 12 if we don't come to an agreement. So I've asked to have a discussion about what the revenue splits look like beyond year 12. If we're going to agree to extend. I've never signed a contract in my life where I don't know the financial terms, but I've agreed to extend the contract. So I think those are reasonable asks. I think we can work through those. And if we are focused on year 13, we have a couple of years to figure that out.
Commissioner, you mentioned the Rose Bowl, and you're part of it, obviously, with your league. There's at least a perception, and I realize, you know, answering questions about perceptions can be tricky, but there's this perception that the Rose Bowl runs college football, and as a result of that prime time at 5 o'clock Eastern in Pasadena, nothing else gets done. Could you address at least how many of us around the country
Sure.
view that?
Yeah, listen, the Rose Bowl is a more than 100-year-old tradition. It is core to college football. Does it run college football? Absolutely not. And what you've seen is that the Rose Bowl has been incredibly flexible the last couple of times we've changed the playoff system. And, you know, they want to be January 1st at 2 p.m. Pacific time every single year. They've agreed not to do that to host a semifinal game in the current construct of the CFP. So they've been flexible in the past. What we're asking for the Rose Bowl is a tiny little ask. What we've said is, if we go to a format where the six New Year's Eve bowl games are playing on a rotating three-year basis, quarterfinal, quarterfinal, semifinal, those quarterfinals, either in an 8-team or a 12-team model, would fall during the New Year's weekend. And presumably the Rose Bowl, if it was hosting a quarterfinal, would host it in its traditional time. One out of every 3 years, they're going to be hosting a semifinal. And they want the right to host a traditional Rose Bowl game if they want to. And if they do, the value of that Rose Bowl game is going to be significantly decreased, because if we put 12 teams into the playoff, they don't get our best team against the Big Ten's best team. They get our third or fourth best team against the third or fourth best team from the Big Ten. And to kind of balance that out, what they're giving up, we've asked for 3 hours every 3 years to be protected against having to compete against a CFP quarterfinal. And everything that we've asked for the Rose Bowl, tiny little ask, we've said if the other contract bowls, you know, the Sugar Bowl, if the Orange Bowl want similar accommodations in the years where they're hosting a semifinal, we'd be willing to give into that as well. So it's 3 hours every 3 years that we're asking for protection on. Not a big ask, but I understand the perception. And I think it's difficult to expand the college football playoffs and also hold on to the great traditions we have in the bowl games. And we're trying to do that. It's a difficult balance.
Commissioner, I appreciate your frankness on that. Just another minute or two, and I know we're about to run out of time, but I would like to get your thoughts on the rest of college sports. We'll spend the next couple of hours, but we'll try to do it in 2 or 3 minutes. What else do you think we need to get to right away? Because, you know, we talk about NIL, we talk about the transfer portal. These are a part of a multitude of issues. What are you most concerned about right now?
Yeah, I would say the three that I'm focused on are NIL, the calendar and rules book for college football, and then the governance model in the NCAA kind of process that's going on. So quickly on NIL, I think no one is enforcing what everybody agrees should be the rule, which is kids can use NIL, but not for inducement or pay for play. Everyone's in agreement about that. At least they say the right thing about that. But no one's enforcing it. And what you have is now kind of legalized cheating that's going on. And we have to fix that. Best case scenario for that is federal law from Congress to address it. I'm not terribly optimistic that we get there before the midterm elections. With respect to the calendar for college football, I agree with you about the transfer portal. We have to look at that. That's unrestricted free agency. The idea that we would have a window that's open 365 days out of the year doesn't make sense to me. Seems like if we move back the early signing date out of the season, and if we close the transfer portal during the season, we'd have a much more stable coaching carousel and player engagement during the season, and that would be good for college football. So focus on those. And then broadly with the NCAA transformation, this is difficult, right? You've got a trade organization that represents more than 1,000 schools in Division I, II, and III that are in absolutely different business models, right? My son plays Division III basketball. You know, his school's athletic department is not in the same business, with due respect, as the schools that play in my league or in the SEC. And, you know, they're just different business models, and none of them are right or wrong. They just are what they are. So you have to create a self-governing structure that is big enough to be inclusive, but small enough so that all of the folks who are in the same room making up rules are trying to achieve the same goals because they operate similar businesses.
Commissioner, I don't know how you did it, but you answered that question in under 2 minutes. That is an all-time record. I cannot tell you how impressed I am. What a pleasure to have you on. You be well, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
Well, Paul, I appreciate you, and I appreciate everything you do for college athletics, and I hope this is the first of many times on your show. Thank you.
It was our pleasure. Wow. I cannot tell you how impressed I was with Commissioner Kliakoff, and we appreciate his time. We're up against the break. Coming right back.